Let's see what's happening in Mark Latham's world today.
What in God's name do you need a solvent for except to kill someone?
That's an outrageous slur.
Google it, mate.
The only way that you can preserve peace is to prepare for war.
Views on News with Mark Latham.
Good morning, Mark. How are you today, mate?
Yeah, good, thanks, Brent. Good to be talking to you. Such a big news week. Everyone's still talking about Trump, of course.
They are. I've got to talk to you about the people that have been hounding you the last couple of days in the, I think it's the Telegraph, that have been writing stories about you taking freebies, and apparently you've been one of the people that have been on the front foot saying that politicians shouldn't do that. But as you have said in the article, you've done nothing wrong. I mean, you've done absolutely nothing wrong with what you've done.
No. Well, my argument in the Parliament has been about the media, because the media have been taking freebies and hospitality from a certain sporting organisation in New South Wales and then becoming lackeys to them. And my argument has been, in that circumstance, they should declare the things that they've been receiving. So there's a big difference between me and the people at the Daily Telegraph. I've declared everything.
Right.
They've declared nothing.
Right.
And when I see a problem or learn of a problem at a sporting organisation, I say something about it. They act as press secretaries for these people. So, you know, that's the point that I've been making, and I think the article they've been running is a reflection of that.
What do you say, though, to people say that, and not, you know, specifically to Mark Latham here, but for people, as I suppose the masses would say, the punters that say politicians shouldn't get these freebies, they shouldn't, be it tickets to football matches or be it, you know, upgrades for airline flights, politicians just shouldn't get these lurks and perks?
Well, I haven't had any upgrades on airlines, but as for going to sporting events, governments spend a hell of a lot of money, billions, on these facilities, and there's major debates in Parliament, so going along gives you an awareness of what's actually happening. And I've got to say to you, Brent, the things that I've been involved in, there's not a lot of luxury or glamour. I love it there, but there's not a lot of luxury or glamour in going to the Greyhounds at Wentworth Park or the trots at Menangle. So these things haven't been off the radar. They haven't been excessive in number. I think we're talking about 14 race meetings over 6 years. So, you know, you need to put it in that perspective, something, of course, you won't read in the Daily Telegraph.
Yeah, very true, very true. Let's talk about the US election. I mean, the polls missed the mark entirely. While there are always polls and trends to consider, no one anticipated this outcome except, I suppose, for Donald Trump himself. It wasn't a close race, Mark. It was a decisive victory for Donald Trump in the end.
It was, and you had to look at the fundamentals of why people vote. I mean, all the media speculation about it, the left-wing media, the fake news, as Trump calls them, got it wrong, because they were focused on the Kamala Harris agenda, which was divisive identity politics, that black people would vote for a black candidate, that women would vote for a female candidate. Instead of looking at the fundamentals of what really affects people in their everyday life, and in the United States, like Australia, they've been going through a cost of living crisis, where in some cases there's been reports of grocery prices doubling over the last 4 years. People can't pay their bills. So their economy had that problem. The truth is the Biden administration overinflated the American economy post-COVID and caused the inflation and didn't have a solution. And Harris's campaign didn't address that at all. It was an interview she had on that program, The View, at the beginning of October, where asked, would you do anything different to Joe Biden? She said, nothing comes to mind. Well, she's off talking about identity politics, which is irrelevant to paying your bills. And Trump, for all his flaws and the criticism he receives, at least he was talking about issues that were relevant to working people. How do we get the economy moving? How do we get inflation down? How do I help you pay your bills? And I think that's essentially the neat summary of why he won.
Have you seen the footage going around of the show The View, the day after, with all of the women on the panel crying?
Yeah, I have.
it's funny, Mark, it's funny.
Crying, but they should cry about their own misjudgment and their own misunderstanding of the American people. And these elites are just so far out of touch. I'm sure everyone on The View there has got a few dollars in the bank and can pay their bills.
Oh, yeah.
But if you've got no awareness of how the average American working family has been faring over the past 4 years, well, you're going to get the election result wrong. So, you know, get a big bucket to collect their tears, but they're really crying about themselves.
Well, they're going to have to get a new panellist because Whoopi Goldberg, she's leaving the United States if Donald Trump wins.
We heard this 8 years ago. But so far, Brent, no report of Hollywood stars, celebrities and media types crossing the American-Canadian border or coming to Australia. They all said this 8 years ago when Trump beat Hillary Clinton, they'd leave the country. But they stay there. They're all on a good salary, a good stipend, and I'm sure they'll be whinging about Trump for the next 4 years, as out of touch as they've ever been.
Do you think that Donald Trump's victory could have significant implications for Prime Minister Anthony Albanese's approach to the upcoming Australian election?
Well, it's the same thing, isn't it? The Australian Labor Party here has been off on identity issues like The Voice. They've had to change the constitution in an unproven way to help a certain group of Australians based on their skin colour, the Indigenous. And that got him way out of touch with the central concern, which is about cost of living. And on that front, a bit like Biden and Harris, Albanese made big inflated promises. He was going to bring down electricity prices and everyone was going to be better off. So when Peter Dutton asked the question in the next election campaign, do you feel like you're better off than you were 3 years ago? I think a majority of Australians will say no. And that's the impact that we saw in the United States and the reason why Trump won. And, yeah, I think it spells very bad news for Albanese because he's gone down the wrong left-wing path like the Democrats in the US and potentially he could pay the same price politically.
Mark, Roderick Holohan, who attacked former police officer Samantha Barlow in 2009, was granted parole again this week despite a violent criminal history. Samantha Barlow, who wasn't properly informed of the parole hearing, expressed concerns about public safety. Premier Chris Minns is considering an appeal and plans to reform the victim notification system, shifting from an opt-in to an opt-out model. Mark, how could someone with Holohan's violent criminal record, including multiple attacks on women, how could he be granted parole? What's this say about the effectiveness of the parole system in protecting public safety?
Well, it's soft. It's soft and out of touch. A couple of weeks ago, Lawrence Barlow, Sam's husband, contacted me. I went to school with Laurie Barlow and played some rugby with him. And I got some information from the minister, Analak Chanthavong, in the correction system on how they could get registered to oppose the parole. And that happened. But the system itself is all wrong when this can happen because the reports about this guy from inside jail are that he's not rehabilitated. Mm-hmm. He's a danger to the people inside the jail. So imagine how bad it'll be for the general public if and when he gets out. So Chris Minns can do the appeal. But in the past, Brent, we have had special legislation in New South Wales in these extraordinary cases where people totally unsuited to release are recommended for release, where the Parliament overrules the decision of the parole board. And that's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see the government step up and say, look, the evidence here is clear. He shouldn't be paroled. He shouldn't be out there in the community. A lot of people say, who know him inside the system, say he'll just attack another woman as sure as night follows day. So let's have special legislation in the Parliament passed in the next fortnight to keep him where he belongs forever, and that's inside jail.
I meant to ask you about the election, and I suppose Elon Musk. Look, Elon Musk was thanked on the stage. He's the richest man in the world. He's a strange character, but it looks like he's got his foot in the Oval Office.
Yeah, he's an interesting character. He's obviously been incredibly successful as an entrepreneur in the business sector. What's motivated him? Because there was a time where he was sort of seen as left of centre. Apparently he's got a trans child and that's been a motivation to get involved with the Trump campaign and stop the pushing of transgender upon young people. Whatever his motivation has been, it gave Trump a lot of credibility and I'll be fascinated. There's lots of interesting things, RF Kennedy Jr. in health and other people involved in the forthcoming Trump administration, but I think the most interesting thing is going to be this position of Elon Musk running government efficiency.
Yes.
Because when he took over Twitter, he sacked 90% of the staff and the service didn't change. So it could be very bad news for all the fat cats in Washington if he runs the same razor through the public sector in the United States and gets a lot more government efficiency. So that could be the outcome. It'll be fascinating to see, can Musk bring those incredible skills in the private sector to government and what he actually does as part of the Trump administration.
Well, he's already said, I think he was asked a question as to how much money he thought he could save, and at the time he said something like $2 trillion, I think, was his answer.
Yeah, they're sums of money, so many zeros there, you lose count, don't you? It's sort of unimaginable to save $2 trillion. But for the American taxpayer, it's probably overdue to have someone. Yet every new government that comes in, Brent, Australia, United States, anywhere, they always talk about, we're going to sort out the waste and mismanagement, and then 3-4 years later, we're talking about the same problem. You'd have to say Musk is the best hope ever for an approach that makes government lean, efficient, and operates not in the interests of public servants, but in the interests of the taxpayers who pay all the bills. So I wish him well. It could provide a whole revolution in government efficiency that other countries can learn from. I know, just as a humble New South Wales politician, there's a stack of waste and excess in the public sector that they won't address because of the power of the unions and other issues. But Elon Musk will be, I think, the most interesting aspect of the Trump administration as to what he does in this space.
There's a lot of naysayers that, you know, are sending emails and text messages and ringing up saying, oh, this is going to be so bad for Australia. You know, Donald Trump being in the White House again, it's going to be so bad for Australia. What do you think it means for Australia?
Well, they're all the people who said Trump would never be in the White House in the first place. You know, if you listen to all those naysayers, and there's a whole stack of them in the media every day, the same left-wing people who got it wrong in 2016 and got it wrong last Tuesday are now apparently, according to them, experts on what Trump will mean for Australia. Well, why would you listen to them for a nanosecond? They're totally discredited in the first place. I think the truth is Trump will be good for the American economy. Look at the way the stock market boomed and shot up after the election result was announced. And that's for the simple reason, Brent, in the left-wing media, Sydney Morning Herald and The Guardian and the ABC, you don't hear about his policies on tax. His policies on tax as the cut give people incentive to work and make profits and grow the economy and create jobs. He's got a policy of no tax on tips in the United States, no tax on overtime, no tax on Social Security. How good would it be in Australia to have no taxation on overtime? So if you get out and you have a crack and you work longer hours and you try and do better for your family and for the future, you haven't got the tax man's hand in your pocket. So they're the policies that grow the economy. Everyone knows that about Trump. And a growing United States economy, with whom we have a free trade agreement, can only be very good news for the Australian economy, which at the moment, under Albanese and Jim Chalmers, is lagging too far behind.
If I can just set the mood, set the scene, it's a meeting in an office in Parliament House, and they're trying to work out when to introduce this misinformation bill. And they're trying to, you know, when do we do this? When do we do this? Well, I've got an idea, someone says. Why don't we do it? Why don't we do it on the night of the US election results? We'll sneak it in. We'll sneak it in on the night of the US election results when no one cares, no one's watching, no one's listening. And that's exactly what they did. Under the roar of the US election coverage, the Albanese government quietly snuck the first step of its new laws to censor us. The misinformation bill, they snuck it in through the House of Representatives.
Yeah, well, it's a tactic as old as politics itself. It's called putting out the trash when nobody's watching, and it tells you a lot about the so-called misinformation bill that they're going down this path. Thankfully, the Senate looks like it's going to block it, because the idea that government and the left-wing media are exempted, you know, it sort of reeks of Orwellian 1984 tactics that these people will control the information and thereby try and control people, citizens themselves. The idea that government and media are exempted and that there's this obscure outfit. How many Australians have ever heard of the Australian Communications and Media Authority?
Well, you know, I have, but lots wouldn't.
Well, I mean, it's just so obscure that these people, unelected bureaucrats, are going to be determining what's true, what's untrue, fining companies and trying to sift through information that normal Australian, well-educated, intelligent people can sort out for themselves. I mean, we're supposed to have the best records of education, higher education we've ever had in Australia. Well, let people sort out the things that they regard as true and untrue. And a lot of this is grey area, isn't it? It's so subjective as to what you might regard as factual and what's fiction. in the world. So you've got to rely on people here rather than unelected bureaucrats to do these things.
So your word on it is the Senate will block it?
Well, I hope so. I saw a report. Hopefully it's not misinformation. Yeah. Hopefully it's true. But I would urge senators to block it, because why is it needed at all? And what are we talking about? People make informed decisions. And the big one we've made in Australia over the last 18 months was about the voice referendum. A lot of material went out there. I'm sure some of it wasn't 100% accurate, but Australians worked that out. And they voted according to what they thought was the best thing for the country. And that's the only way in which you can run a democracy. We get into sort of weird, Stalinistic, totalitarian tactics here. If government starts to control the information that's available to people, when people are smart enough to work it out for themselves.
I've just got an email that's come through, and your take on why the polls got it so wrong. I think it's Alan. Alan has sent an email. Can you ask Mark for me? So I'll ask. I'll do it. Alan, this is a question from Alan to Mark. He wants to know what your take is on why the polls got the results on the US election so wrong, and do you think it could be the same sort of thing here in Australia?
Well, did they get it wrong? It depends on the media out there. You know, I think it's certainly true. The Sydney Morning Herald, for example, was only reporting the polls that they thought were favourable for Harris, their preferred candidate. You know, partisan media activity. But I looked at a polling average in the key states the day before the election, and it showed that Trump would win. And I had a good bet on him to that effect. And I think I said to you last Sunday, I thought Trump would win. So there were a couple of polls that were dramatically wrong. There was one in Iowa, just a state poll in Iowa, that ended up 16 points wrong. But that was an outlier, obviously a dreadful mistake. But that polling average, which is always the best way of doing it, take a basket of polls, average out the net result, it showed a Trump win, and that's what we got. So they were dramatically wrong 8 years ago when Trump won in 2016 against Hillary Clinton. The polls were way out. But I think it said that in the United States the pollsters have corrected some of that on how to find the so-called silent Trump voters. And while they weren't perfect on Tuesday, they were nowhere near as bad as they were 8 years ago.
Prime Minister Anthony Albanese announced this week proposed legislation to be introduced to Parliament. It would ban kids aged under 16 from using Facebook, TikTok, Instagram and X, even with parental consent. Rarely enforced age limits have been put in place since the dawn, I suppose, of social media. Facebook, for example, has always required users to be aged 13 and older. It's been done with certain different levels of success in other countries as well, these strict age bans, Mark.
Well, I don't like the idea of overruling parental consent. Why would Albanese think that he or one of his ministers knows more about the best interests of a child than their parents? You know, government can get arrogant, and when you start saying the kids I've never met, never will meet, I know what's best for them. I think that's a worry. And the other worry is just how it's enforced, because there's so much material on the internet. They talk about the dark net, where people can go down the rabbit hole and find all sorts of stuff. Does banning something seemingly as innocuous as Instagram, you know, photos of what people are doing, does that send the kids into worse territory? And how do you police it? I mean, if a parent really gives consent, they think a child gets some educational benefit from viewing YouTube, for example, and there is that material available, does the parent just give them their phone or set up an account on their behalf? So I don't know if government can do this effectively. And to some extent, I think this was a much bigger problem 20 years ago. Government's late on the scene. And over that 20 years, Brent, parents have kind of worked out for themselves this new phenomenon of social media and how they need to police it in their home for the best interests of their child. So I think the parents are, you know, better informed and capable of doing this now, and I'm not too sure the legislation will even work in practice.
How much money did you lose on Tuesday?
Probably $30.
Oh, that's all right, man. That's okay.
Yeah, I know. You couldn't get that winner, could you? Knights Choice, he'd run fifth in the Bendigo Cup. No, the Bendigo Cup winner, who won easily, Sea King, was in the market. But Knight's Choice, did he deserve to be 100 to 1? He's probably 500 to 1 on form. But, You know, my old grandmother, may she rest in peace, always said, Mark, anything can win the Melbourne Cup. Well, on Tuesday, Brent, anything did win the Melbourne Cup.
It's true. What a great story for Robbie Dolan, though. I mean, I was reading one story. It was the Melbourne Cup. The Melbourne Cup wins sprinkled with fairy dust, and all of a sudden there are kids and young people all over the country thinking that racing must be pretty cool.
Yeah, well, a life-changing experience for him. His first win at a Melbourne Carnival, his first ride in a Melbourne Cup, and you can't get better than coming first. He rode a beautiful race coming through the inside there, weaving a path for his horse to win narrowly. So full credit to him. He's got other skills. He was on The Voice, singing show.
Yeah, he can sing a song too.
So he's multi-talented, and good luck to him. It's one of those Cinderella stories you get in racing, and good for him. Also, Queensland racing. I think it's the probably historians would have to check this, but I think it's the first time ever a Queensland trained horse has won the Melbourne Cup. They don't normally come down from Queensland, but this one has, and Robbie Dolan and all the connections have had the experience of a lifetime.
Fantastic story. All right, mate, we'll let you go. Always good to catch up with you. Thank you for spending some time with us each and every Sunday morning. You have a good week. We'll talk to you next Sunday.
A pleasure. Thanks, Brent.
Thanks, Mark. That is Mark Latham.